Alright, Happy New Year and welcome back to Card Knock Life. I'm Corey and here's Daryl.
What up?
I had a great holiday week and a half, if you will.
I did some cubing. I did some cubing. It was fun.
Yeah. I did do some cubing, I should say. I did some 15 card Highlander cubing.
Oh, I did the vintage cube on Moto. It was quite fun. I did not worst 2-1, so I stayed positive. I 3-0'd one time.
Yeah.
I played some really bad decks, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. One deck I had no business 2-1-ing with. It was like mono white Planeswalkers and Armageddons, but like had no wrath, so you couldn't beat like three creatures.
Yeah.
But somehow I 2-1. It just didn't make
sense. There was like a lot of juicy stuff in that cube.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely played a Reanimator deck, a Storm deck. I played just like some garbage Smokestack Bitter Blossom deck. That was great. Like,
yeah. Nice.
The cube was sweet. Probably going to keep drafting it until it goes away. But
yeah, I played a ton of Moto, Modern, a bunch of different decks. I did probably like 4 or 5 leagues and then just a shit ton of cues. So nice. I was testing out a lot of stuff. And I keep coming back to this Grixis Control deck. I love Green-White, or Green-White or Abzan Collected Company. But I don't feel like it's... Say that again?
That deck seems like it's just right up your alley.
It's my deck. It's definitely my thing, but I feel like given that Storm is so prevalent, that's not a very good matchup for me.
Yeah, green white generic value idiot seems like your kind of deck. But...
Well, anyways, speaking of green white Collected Company, there is a brand new Collected Company Facebook community that I just started. I think last weekend.
Spicy.
And we've got quite a few people hopping onto that already, so it's taken off by storm. If that's the right figure of speech for that, I don't know. But I'll put the link in the show notes. It is facebook.com/groups/creaturetoolbox. I think that's what it is.
Yeah. It's
slash creature toolbox, yeah. It's basically an opportunity for, creature toolbox, excuse me. It's basically an opportunity for players of those types of decks to share ideas, share deck lists, and sort of, stay with the latest tech. For Coco, Eldritch Evolution, or Court of Column decks.
Generic green value creatures combined with tutors, yes.
Yeah, but also speaking of the Facebooks, we have a giveaway this week. We got all our tokens in. I got the playmat in. They look fantastic. Rob Rivera really knocked it out of the park with this art. One side of this token is a generic, like, it's a samurai in the style of, like a Japanese papyrus painting or something along those lines, like a canvas painting. And the back side of it is a 4/4 angel token specifically for Geist or for Entreat or for Luminarch Ascension, even if you want to go that route. And so what I will do is I'm going to send 3 copies of each token to 2 people that have been following our Facebook page and 2 people that are following our YouTube or subscribed to our YouTube channel. So if you didn't have an opportunity to do that before this giveaway, please go ahead and hop on to our Facebook page. You can search Card Knock Life on Facebook or search Card Knock Life on YouTube. So I randomly selected a couple of people. If this is you, please send me a message either on our Facebook or by email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com with your address, and I will mail these to you. Congratulations to our Facebook likes, Jay Diaz and Zach Goldman, and to our YouTube subscribers, Miles Coe and Daniel Maddock. So again, Jay Diaz, Zach Goldman, Miles Coe, and Daniel Maddock, you've got some tokens headed your way as long as I get your address that you would like me to send them to.
Congrats, guys and gals. I don't know. Just to make sure. So here's the real thing. More thing before we get into the meat of the show. We're 4 episodes away from episode 100.
We are, yeah.
Are we going to do something cool for episode 100?
Well, technically this playmat and token situation was a celebration of our 100th episode, which hasn't come yet, I know. But as we approach it, we've got a whole new set of tokens. This is our second installment of tokens.
Yeah, because I was thinking of like live streaming the 100th episode.
We could do that. We could also welcome back as guests our previous cast members.
Ooh.
I was thinking about that one. So let's just put it this way. Stay tuned and we'll announce. Probably we'll have to do it next week because it is coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, I know. That's why I brought it up. I just want to know. Something's coming. I'm probably going to live stream it. If you want to watch the underbelly of Card Knock Life, while I look like a complete doofus and Corey looks like a genius, feel free to watch the stream of the 100th episode. But otherwise, we might have some special stuff in store for you guys.
You thought you heard a lot of Scout barking in the background. Just wait till we live stream this bad boy.
Oh, so much Scout. So much Scout.
She'll be our featured guest on this one.
She'll become the mascot of the podcast.
Yeah, see, what happens is my wife always gets home, like, right while I'm kind of at the tail end of this, and Scout can't help but to bark at anyone that comes to the door in the house. So, lately I've been having her text me when she pulls into the garage so that I can at least be with my finger on the mute button.
Yeah, perfect.
Anyways, we got a lot to talk about today, so let's jump right in. The first thing, we're going to just go over the previous year in Magic, specifically a year in bannings. I'd say that 2017 marked the most bannings in the history of competitive Magic the Gathering. So let's go back down and trip through memory lane here. In January of the year.
I was about to say, the only time I think it happened that there were more bans was when Legacy and Vintage split.
Yeah.
That was. Yeah.
All right. Well, in January, we had a standard banning, Emrakul the Promised End, Smuggler's Copter, and Reflector Mage all at once. Got axed, as well as Modern, Gitaxian Probe, and Golgari Grave Troll. So we kicked things off with a bang.
We
did.
5
cards sacrificed in the name of a healthy format. April, Standard, Felidar Guardian is banned. And that was after they initially announced no changes to Standard. There was an emergency ban on, like, what, a Monday or a Tuesday, which kind of caused some controversy.
I'm crazy like that, yeah.
Legacy, Sensei's Divining Top is banned, and Vintage, Gitaxian Probe, and Gush are restricted.
I hate reading those words every time I see them.
All right.
Stop being banned. It really hurts my soul.
Jump ahead 2 months.
Sure.
June. Standard. Aetherworks Marvel is banned. Whoops.
Yeah.
It's still bad. August. Vintage. Thorn of Amethyst and Monastery Mentor restricted. Yawgmoth's Bargain is unrestricted. Hey, one thing taken off the list. So, Daryl, go ahead. Tell me all you want to tell me about how sad it was to see Emrakul the Promised End go.
So, Emrakul died for our sins. Let's be
yeah.
I feel like Emrakul died for our sins. So, Emrakul is just not a fun card to play against. Because ever played against Mindslaver in a competitive format, Mindslaver was not a fun card to play against.
Yeah.
And they changed the rules of Mindslavers so that they could print Emrakul, and they still banned it. So it used to be, I don't know if you remember this, that when you activated a Mindslaver effect and took your opponent's turn, you could look at their sideboard.
Oh, yeah?
You could 100% look at their sideboard. You could cast wish cards that went into their sideboard so that you could have that extra information. So, oftentimes, even when I didn't have a Mindslaver lock playing, like, Blue-White Tron in Modern, before the Emrakul banning, I would Mindslaver my opponent one time, ask to see their sideboard, and they would scoop, regardless of if I had the lock. Because they wouldn't want me to see their sideboard.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's a good shortcut, though, through the process of the Mindslaver lock. Because some people just play it out and then go to time.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I just ask to see their sideboard before I even establish Academy Ruins in the lock, just to start with, well, what's in there? And if you're willing to show me, great, I have more information. And if you're not, I'm going to win the game. Sweet.
Oh, yeah, before Academy Ruins, I'd say that's a little premature, but...
Yeah. Well, some people would just assume it's already happened. Like, you know, you've cast Gifts Ungiven and pieced this crap together, so, yeah, whatever.
Sure.
So they changed the way the whole card functions so they could print it before. And then they put a cost reduction on Emrakul.
Yeah.
If Emrakul was just 13 mana Mindslaver, the card would be completely fine. Because it also just gave your opponent a turn after you did as much as you could to ruin their turn.
Uh-huh.
But they made Emrakul function amazingly with Delirium, which caused a problem. Because now we're getting into these very unhealthy play patterns where you've got decks that are just trying to mill a bunch of cards and put a bunch of stuff in their graveyard, and then you know, you're playing Grapple with the Past to get the Emrakuls back that you've milled, and you're just casting, you know, 5, 6, 7 mana Emrakuls. I think 7's as low as you could go in Standard. But you're just casting 7 mana Emrakuls. and you just got this, you know, giant bear of a card Ishkanad stand in front of it. Delirium was kind of a mistake when all this was there, and Emrakul was kind of the end game piece that was also just unfun. So it died. It died for the unfun sin.
You're giving me PTSD, man. I'm having flashbacks of the green-black delirium matchups. Miserable, miserable shit.
and people just don't like Mindslayer. But I think Emrakul was a really well-designed card. I think where we run into problems, like, flavorfully very well done. But when you're starting to change rules because you think it's going to be too good, and then, you know, lo and behold, they banned it, not realizing the Aetherworks Marble was actually the problem, and people... we're just on the fringe of starting to put together the Aetherworks Marble was like Elbusto. And like you play like a tune with Aether into like random garbage mana rock to gain you some life, or random garbage artifact to gain you some life and bunch of some energy. And all of a sudden you're spinning the wheel on turn four and taking people's turns. Emrakul died for that sin right there. I think was where we kind of went with the problems.
Yeah.
And so all in all, I think as much as cool of a card as Emrakul was, its banning along with Aetherworks Marble a little later was necessitated. Smuggler's Copter, I understand why they did it. It's a cool functionality for aggressive decks to be able to have this additional play of selecting the appropriate resources over the course of the game. But a 3-3 that's able to just give your creatures haste and deal a bunch of damage is a little too good.
Yeah, I think that, so the question we're really getting at here with this ban list discussion is, do you think the formats have benefited because of these bannings? And do you think that they're healthier because of them? Now, when it comes to Smuggler's Copter, I think you might be able to argue that was maybe a little premature on that one. There's ubiquity in there's a lot of Smuggler's Copter going around. Like, a lot of decks were running it. It was boring because it was just the thing that you automatically would include it. It's an artifact that comboed, quote unquote, with having a creature that has at least one power, right? Which every deck does.
So, I would venture to say that the bannings made the format healthier overall, but there are two cards that I would specifically like to point out were necessary.
Uh-huh.
And then one, obviously the one that can come back off the list now is Felidar Guardian. I don't know. Oh, no, it can't because...
it's still Saheeli.
Saheeli. Never mind. The F that card, it's dead to me, sure. I thought for some reason Felidar and Saheeli, like one of them rotated out and the other one didn't. No, can't bring it back.
No, Saheeli has never been played since this banning happened.
Yep, got it. So I think there are two cards that kind of got punished unjustly. And that's Copter and Reflector Mage.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, Reflector Mage was very preemptive. When Saheeli was coming out, they were thinking, you know, Saheeli value decks just want Reflector Mage.
Yeah, and Blue-White Flash was a big deck at the time, but it had a tough, you know, if you weren't well-versed in the green-black matchup, you got bodied, but Avacyn was so good that sometimes you could just beat it anyways. Reflector Mage wasn't, like, the problem was Reflector Mage wasn't really good against green-black because it couldn't beat Ishkanah.
Right.
Like you bounce Ishkanah, and they would have three spiders. And you're just like, well, damn, I have to beat these spiders. And then the turn after you played Reflector Mage, they'd play Ishkanah, and they'd have three more spiders. And you're just like, well, this is just the literal worst. Like, this is not – and then, like, Reflector Mage versus Emrakul was embarrassing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just like, you can't do that either. Like, so, like, Reflector Mage was kind of embarrassed by green-black, and it was – pretty good against the aggro decks, but you had to be able to get like Bygone Bishops and like Copters and stuff going to make Reflector Mage really have an impact. And so I think it kind of got unjustly whacked as like, well, if Saheeli Value is going to be a thing and they're going to play Felidar Guardian, we might as well take Reflector Mage away so they can't like play the tempo game. I think if they'd have just jumped straight to Felidar Guardian, we'd have been okay. I think Reflector Mage died for Felidar Guardian sins.
Right, absolutely. And I think that it would be actually probably a pretty decent card to have around versus some of like the energy decks that later showed up.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's unfortunate that they kind of picked the wrong piece and a lot of other decks suffer from it. You know? It just seems so obvious that Felidar Guardian was the problem. However, this banning happened before Felidar Guardian was even
printed. Yeah. You know what's really good against Long Tusk Cub?
What?
Reflector Mage.
Oh, Reflector Mage, yeah, of course.
Long Tusk Cub is embarrassing against Reflector Mage.
Yeah, you pump like, all that energy into it and then bounce it.
Yeah, you put all your energy to it, and then you just bounce it. You're just like, well, that did not work.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of like up creek without a paddle. Same thing with Servant of the Conduit. You play Servant on the draw, and they just bounce it, and you don't have a Birds of Paradise. And you're just like, well, I got two energy.
Yeah.
Like, yes, that's fine.
How about this one, Daryl? I'm going to change the subject for a second. We got to move on from this.
Okay.
The Aetherworks Marvel is banned. However, it's still in a standard legal set currently. Now, we don't no longer have the Emrakuls or the Ulamogs because Battle for Zendikar has rotated.
This is the one I was thinking of. This is the one that could potentially be unbanned.
Is it worth it?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
So you're going to spin the wheel. What are you spinning the wheel for? You're going to hit...
Now? Nicol Bolas.
Hit Nicol Bolas. Yeah, that was the one. And you can easily splash that off of Aether Hub and Teamer Aetherwork or Teamer Energy, as we've seen. You know, they splash Scarab God. You know, Scarab God's a good hit. What other giant things? I mean, sure, there's a giant dinosaur that you want to
hit.
Yeah,
there is. I was thinking Gishath. Or whatever the green, red, white one is.
Carnage Tyrants.
The
new red dinosaur that gives you card advantage would be a good one, too. Like, we'll get to that in spoiler time, but like, who knows what other giant dinosaurs are going to come out? Like, but yeah, I think it's just best to like let Aetherworks Marvel die.
I would agree with that. So that brings us back to the original question here: is Standard in a better place after these bannings?
No.
It's still clearly a degenerate format, isn't it?
Yes. No, because energy was a mistake. Because they didn't create a way to interact. If they would have created a way to interact with energy, like they made the very seamless way to interact with planeswalkers, this would have been fine.
Yeah.
But they didn't. So
all this action with the banned and restricted list, specifically as it pertains to Standard, because that's something that we haven't seen a lot of, it sets a precedent. And now anytime anything is less than appealing or becomes stale, like Standard always does, people are calling for bannings of cards. We want to see the banning of Long Tusk Cub and Attuned with Aether.
So people are calling for the banning of cards, but I think that these bans were warranted.
These ones or the Long Tusk Cub banning?
These ones, and eventually something like Long Tusk Cub or Attuned, because Wizards is admitting mistakes here. Like they're saying, you know what? Emrakul was too good.
Yeah.
You know, and Reflector Mage, I don't think was too good, but they were afraid of it being too good until they realized that Felidar was really the problem, and it was just way too good with Zaheem. So, like, conceding that putting Splinter Twin in Standard is a mistake is fine. Conceding that Emrakul and its disastrous play pattern is a mistake, that's fine. Card was well designed, but the Mindslaver mechanic is just not an enjoyable play pattern.
Right.
And Smuggler's Copter is a mistake. If they tweaked the numbers on it, like it was a 2-2 or a 1-1 or it had crew 2 or something like that, or it didn't fly, like if they tweaked the numbers on it and kept the same basic premise that it's a vehicle that whenever you attack or block, you loot, I think the card would have been a home run, a smash. Because it's like the kind of card that you just want to have. You give your aggro deck this like very like resource important, like it put, you also put the importance on resources and managing them correctly, like making sure you don't flood. Like there are very obvious discards. Like if you have five lands, you don't keep a land, you discard it and keep whatever spell you drew. But right. You know, when you're short on lands, if you don't draw a land, you have to mitigate, you know, what is the most important thing and manage your resources appropriately and map out the rest of your game. And those games I think were freaking awesome. And so Smuggler's Copter to me, if it had like worse stats, like it was just like a 2-2 or a 1-1, would be just a smash hit. And so I think it was unfortunate that it got banned. But like Aetherworks Marvel, complete mistake. Like, here, let me give you this free spell with giant Eldrazi in the format and then Nicol Bolas in the format. Like, these are cards that you don't want people putting into play on turn 4.
Right.
Because like, if you activate the Marvel, put it into play, and then get your opponent has to exile two cards in their hand, that's a miserable play pattern. Like, that's absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
And then for the person playing that deck, if you don't hit the bolus and you don't have a backup hit, you're just like, well, this is stupid. I don't know why I'm playing this deck. So, like, and I think it comes down to, will Wizards finally admit that energy itself and the way it was designed is a mistake? So energy is really cool. It's a new mechanic that you use to power up stuff. but there's no way to interact with it.
Right. The problem is clear at this point. It's just a matter of not so much like admitting. I don't want them to like eat crow necessarily, because I just want them to learn and improve from this. We need to have, without having to force new mechanics by preventing like a reasonable counter strategy to them in a standard environment, there needs to be a way to like highlight them, right? But energy is one that you don't have any way to remove the energy, right? Like that's clear. That's the problem with it.
Right.
However, looking at the spoilers, we have more stuff like that coming out. So I don't see that, you know, like based on the time that they're printing cards and actually releasing cards and designing the set and all of that, I don't think they had enough time to learn from that mistake with the next set's design process in mind. Because I fear that Ascend might be more of the same thing. You can't interact with it.
So there's two things that I have a problem with. Is Ascend is a lot harder to accumulate than energy. Having 10 permanents is a very real like thing you have to put forth effort to do.
Okay, absolutely. I get it. I'm not saying that Ascend is energy too. It's not like going to be the problem that takes over standard.
But,
I'm acknowledging the fact that this is one. This is another example of something that just happens. It's like another. It's an emblem, basically. You can't interact with the emblem. Right.
And I understand that. And it's really hard. But the thing I would say is it's really hard to create a scenario where you can easily interact. Like, planeswalkers were another one that could have been like energy, but they made a very easy way to interact by attacking them with creatures.
Sure.
And doing the same thing with energy would have been miserable. Like, it would have made playing with energy and around energy horrible. And then, like, the whatever it is, when you ascend, you get the city's blessing. Like, creating a way to steal the city's blessing would have been a very good mechanic. Something like the monarch, like you deal 5 damage to them in a turn and you take the city's blessing. Or something like that.
Yeah, like, yeah. It doesn't seem, you know, we don't have enough information to really know at this point.
I haven't seen anything from the city's blessing that is like extremely broken.
Okay. Anyways, let's jump to Modern before we're kicking a dead horse here in Standard. Modern had Gitaxian Probe and Golgari Grave Troll banned in the beginning of the year, which was absolutely necessary by all means. I would not disagree with either one of those on the ban list, despite being a big Gitaxian Probe player myself and Grixis Delver at the time.
Yep.
But Golgari Grave Troll... I am impressed and happy that they took the chance to just basically give a card a shot off of the banned list that had been previously put onto the banned list, even before it was really given an opportunity in Modern.
Yeah.
And then they admitted that it was a fault and they took it off. Or they put it back on, I should say.
Yep. I think that Modern is much healthier than it was.
And that's it. That's all we got for Modern.
I really don't think there's much discussion. Like, Gitaxian Probe created these miserable play patterns. And, like, having this very free way to get perfect information takes a lot of difficulty out of Magic. And I don't particularly enjoy that. Like,
absolutely.
So, I mean, I don't know. I think they nailed it with Modern. There's not much more to say.
So the problem areas were taken care of in January of the year. And we haven't had to touch Modern with the ban list, which says a lot because these other formats, it's not so much the case.
I want them to touch Modern with the ban list in many ways. But I know that
you don't feel like it's necessary though, do you?
I do, but I know that people are going to call me a whiner and say I don't like these things, so I should just suck it up anyways. And so I might talk about it later, but for now I'm just going to leave it be that I would like to do a lot of editing to Modern.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, save it for later. All right. The last two I can't really speak on. I know that Divining Top was a huge part of the Miracles deck. And so, Miracles now I know is also like come back as one of the best decks in Legacy because of Search for Azcantha.
Yeah, it's this weird amalgamation. So before, you just needed 4 tops, and that was like your card advantage engine. You played 4 Brainstorm because it's the best card in Legacy. Now you're playing like 8 extra cantrips and some Search for Azcanthas. Whereas before you would play like Clicks or extra Power Blast or like whatever generic thing you felt like you needed in your main board. And you play Mentors because you're at tops, because Mentor plus top is just broken. But it did make a huge change to Legacy. I still stand by the fact that if you look at what Miracles is now, the problem card was never top. The problem card was never, ever, 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 ever top. Counterbalance top existed for eons in Legacy before Terminus. Terminus was the problem. One mana instant speed Wrath of God was the problem. And so now, if you look at Legacy, you have four color pile, which is just four color Deathrite Shaman based, the best cards I own. Which doesn't really care about Terminus, because you just kill my one Deathrite Shaman and my one Leo, and I just play another one.
Yeah.
And then you have Storm, doesn't care about Terminus. Sneak and Show, doesn't really care about Terminus. You know, you have all of these combo decks that don't give a damn about the most powerful thing in Miracle's arsenal, which is a one-mana Wrath of God instant speed.
Yeah.
Like, Terminus was the problem. Wizards ignored the problem and took top. And it's going to bother me until they unban top, which will never happen. And they blamed it on logistical issues, which, you know what, you're right. People are bad at spinning tops, so rounds take forever.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they banned the wrong card. And they're never going to admit that.
Sure. Sure.
I'm going to stop my rant, because I want to play, like, four-color counterbalance with Tarmogoyfs and just, like, beat people down and lock them out of the game. I just want it back. But I know that it's a lost cause, so stop.
I've heard good things about the new Miracles deck, and I've even played it, actually. I put it together for a while on Moto. Before Search Res Kanta, there was just, like, a Portent Miracles deck that seemed pretty fair.
The Miracles deck still plays Portent, but now it gets to play like a couple of counterbalances and stuff like that. So it's like, it's basically, it's trying to be the Miracles of old, but you just don't have, like, you have to sandbag all of your cantrips and, and you do have to think through your turns a lot more with Ponder. So it makes playing the deck, like, more skillful. But at the same time, like, if you just land one of your two or three counterbalances and your opponent is, like, mono cantrips like Show and Tell, and they just don't go off in your face, like, they're dead because you just have one drops on top of your deck, and you're just like, well, you don't get to cantrip. Good luck trying to find A plus B.
Right, right. So then what's your verdict? Legacy a better place because of the banning?
Legacy is a fine place. I don't think it's better because I want top back. Most people would say it's
better. All right, last one, Daryl. Give your Reader's Digest condensed take on Vintage. After the Vortex and Probe and Gush are restricted, and Throne of Amethyst and Monastery Mentor are restricted.
Free spells are busted. Let's start there.
Yeah.
Perfect Information is busted. So, like, being able to just have fast bond and play all your islands and then float mana and then gush and then play them again, like, do that. And have this, like, Lotus Cobra Storm deck that was a thing. And having Free Information and just being able to play Mono Blue, Paradox of Outcome Storm, which is too good. Get that shit out of here. Like, go down to one. Easy game. Thorn of Amethyst. So, Workshops is just the best deck most of the time. If people don't play Oath, which is really good against Shops, because you just put Oath of Druids into play, and then you flip over a giant monster and you kill one. If you don't play Dredge or Oath, you're just going to lose to Shops. Or if you don't have a solid Shops plan, you're not playing a bunch of Disenchants and, like, Bifors and, like, you have actual lands in your deck and not just a bunch of dual lands and boxing. And you don't build a good plan, you're going to lose to Shops because they have 8 sphere resistance. Well, Singleton Thorn of Amethyst now means this: most of Workshop's taxes and Eldrazi's taxes also affect them because it taxes their creatures. They do still have the one thorn, so that if they get the thorn on turn one, you're just like kind of behind the eight ball if you're a spell deck. And I think that's fine. Monastery Mentor was just the only win condition in Vintage period. Like, all of the blue decks just played a bunch of Mentors, and it didn't matter what colors you were. Like, even the Leovold decks splashed for Mentor, because they had Deathrite Shaman, and Mentor was just that good. Mentor was the win condition in the Storm decks, because you could play, like, two Mentors, you could Paradoxical all your mocks and play all your mocks and cast Time Walk, and your opponent was just dead. So, like, Singleton Mentor is still busted because you can still Demonic Tutor for it, put it into play, and then play a bunch of Mox and Paradox and Outcome it, or like Ponder, Preordain, Ancestral, whatever, you know. And your opponent would still be super far behind. But, like, people were playing multiple mainboard Sulfur Elementals to beat Mentor.
Wow.
If you don't know what the card is, the 3-2 flash split second for 3, it gives all white creatures plus 1, minus 1. So that they could kill all the tokens. Like, that card was nuts. Illness in the Ranks was insane. Like, those were real sideboard cards vintage. And so was Engineered Plague, because you just had to beat them. So, I think that the restriction of all those cards made vintage healthier. Yawgmoth's Bargain hasn't gone off the chain, but it's a really cool old card to see. You know, Index, where you can go, like, Darkrit, you know, land, like, Moxen, Bargain, Storm. Dark Petition Storm plays, like, 1 or 2 as a card advantage engine. And then you can just play Show and Tell, and Show and Tell Bargain into play, and then draw your deck. So, like, there's a bunch of different ways to bargain, and it's super cool, too. And then I've seen Academy Rector, Sack, go get Bargain. So, like, there's a bunch of different ways to do it. There's enough fast mana and broken stuff in Vintage that Bargain is going to be good.
All right. So, cool. Sounds like it's an improvement.
I think it's an overall improvement, yes.
Yeah. Awesome. The last thing, you know, like, I guess the bannings do their part to shake up a format and kind of, like, maintain the health of a format. But taking a totally different perspective on that, we've got a change coming last year in the form of the decklist postings, specifically the Modo postings, where Wizards has limited the data that has been given to us as far as each deck posted was previously just kind of randomly selected from the bunch, and it could show that 4 out of the 5 decks were Eldrazi decks that were the top competitors in the modern leagues. So now we've got a system where there have to be more unique cards in those deck lists for them to actually show up. And so my question for you is this. After a year of seeing this play out, do you feel like this has contributed to some of the diversity in these formats, specifically Modern?
No. I think that it has hidden how much what people are playing. So, like, what I wish they would do with the data is just make all the data available.
Yeah.
And say, but bunch the decks together. So, like, if they share, you know, 50 cards, they go into some archetype bin. And then you can see, you know, archetype bin Jund or archetype bin, like an MTG Goldfish style thing. Archetype bin Affinity or archetype bin Blood Moon Control or whatever, you know. Whatever you want to call those bins, top 8-8 or 5-0 or whatever. And, you know, here's the list. And you can kind of, and like, they highlight what cards are different than most of the generic decks of that archetype. So, like, if you have a Jund bin, say that, you know, and my 10 cards were, I played 2 extra basics of each color, 3 Blood Moons, and 3 Rabble Masters. Like, that would tell you that I decided to play Blood Moon and Rabble Master to try and prey on, you know, Tron and Death Shadow. You know, so that you have this, like, information, like, so that it's easy to ferry out, you know, what people are trying or what new information is really there.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think Standard in and of itself is a pretty good example of how this is maybe not the most effective strategy. Because even with the kind of concealing of archetypes, we still have Teemer Energy just running rampant in Standard. MTG Goldfish does a good job of compiling these results and basically draws most of its data from league results on Modo. And even with that, Teemer Energy stands at 22.67% of the meta. When we know that that's already a huge number, that's about a quarter of the decks. It's probably more likely even more than that because there are more Teemer Energy decks that aren't being reported.
I would guess it's 40%.
Wow.
I would guess in a format like Standard that, you know, you're probably concealing 10 to 15% of information.
Yeah.
That, like, 10 to 15% more people are playing Teemer Energy.
Yeah, but the Modern, on the other hand, looks really great. I mean, as a result, like, it's really unclear if you just look at the data alone which deck is the best in the format. Because the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8 decks are pretty similar in representation based on what's been given to us and what's been reported. So from a player that's never played any modern to go online and just look at the numbers and say, well, what am I going to play? You know, it's kind of hard to make that determination just with the results.
Right, but here's the question that, you know, again, when you look at it standard, how much is being concealed? How much of the Storm bucket being the best, you know, I'm picking Storm.
Yeah.
If Storm's the best deck, you know, how many Storm decks 5-0'd compared to, you know, this arbitrary creation of diversity in Modern by picking a bunch of decks that have different cards? Because that's easy to do. You know, I want to know how, you know, today, how many Storm decks 5-0'd?
Sure.
Because if the answer is, you know, 20, and then you show me a Storm deck, and you have, you know, 19 other ones that are within two cards of each other, and then you show me five other decks, like a Lantern deck and a Jund deck, to create this artificial diversity, and Storm's just by far and away the best deck, what are you really showing me?
Right, right. That's fair.
So that's my concern about this. That's why I think that this taking all of the data away and not giving it to us is a net negative.
Yeah, I've heard that argument a lot, and I totally can get behind that. I would say that the data limiting has done something, though. Be it good or bad, it has done something. I think it's if nothing else, it's just muddied up the waters. But it's not
sure.
A zero result. You know, there's something that's happened as a result.
So your question was, has it promoted a healthy and diverse meta?
Yeah.
And I think the answer is no.
All right.
I think it has provided a cover for the fact that it looks like a healthy and diverse meta. Holy Diva actually tweeted out that, you know, Modern is basically the same four or five decks in 70 different permutations, basically. And there are cool decks that you'd like to play against, like Jeskai Control or Blue-White Control, but there's no point in playing them when you should just be playing one of the, like, two or three powerful decks in some permutation, whether that be a land-based combo deck like E-tron or Valakut, 700 discard spells and a threat deck in Grixis Death Shadow or Jund or Abzan, a linear combo deck. Pick your 1,000 linear combo decks and throw one at the wall. Storm is the most popular right now. And then, like, Affinity and the various different linear aggro decks.
Yeah.
And, like, to say that there's a bunch of different archetypes because they do these four things very differently is taking away from the fact of saying, you know, there has to be a deck with 7 million discard spells, because if there wasn't, you couldn't really do anything against all these different decks. And the 7 million discard spells deck is just not a fun play pattern.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's, you know, they really are, like, you know, just five or six archetypes in disguise as others. You kind of would assume that from that assessment, though, that you could combat a large portion of the meta with the same sorts of strategies, and that's just not the case. I mean, the diversity of needs for your sideboard is huge. It's really hard.
It's because all the combos don't share the same pieces.
Right.
Well, linear all-in combo deck, like, not all of them play multiple spells in the same turn. Not all of them use the graveyard. Not all of them use artifacts. But they're all the same thing. Ignore my opponent. Do thing A. Did I win?
Yeah. I don't know. All right, I say we move on from this. We got one more thing to wrap up this year of Magic the Gathering.
Yes.
And it's looking forward to the next year. Daryl, you want to introduce that?
Yeah, so everyone has New Year's resolutions. You know, I'm going to make myself better by losing some weight or exercising or giving up soda or doing less this or that or more this or that, traveling more. Well, this isn't exactly our New Year's resolution, but it's our wish list. What do we want ourselves to be for Magic in 2018? What do we want Magic to do? So I'm going to start off with my number one wish for Magic, and it's going to probably be tied to your number one wish for Magic, which is, you know, they've done this Magic Arena beta. As a guy who spent a lot of money on Modo, via, you know, winning tournaments to invest money, spending a lot of time, spending money to build cool decks, I just don't want Modo to die and all that money to go to waste. I want to be able to keep playing Modem. And I want them to make it better. I want it to not die because they made it better and they gave me an outlet to play all these cool things.
Yeah.
That's my wish. Like, it's very simple. Just don't let Moto die. Let Cube keep being awesome and vintage and legacy and modern and update the programming to where I can do a freaking infinite loop and cards just aren't randomly bugged like Reality Smasher and the game works the way it's supposed to. And, like, I would be the happiest dude in the world. I would just be in my computer chair when I had some free time and smiling because I get to do the thing I love, you know? So that's my simple wish.
Well, mine was for MTG Arena not to suck. And I guess with that comes, like, an ample way to sort of bring the enfranchised Moto players over to MTG Arena where they don't have to basically start from the ground floor. And I don't really honestly expect that to happen, but it is on my wish list.
Yeah.
If Moto or MTG Arena becomes a modern and eternal format place, then they've got to do something to make it so that we are just not completely shut down on Moto and we can get some value back from our collections.
That I would agree with. I was about to say, I don't mind if Arena and Moto live side by side. If you're committing to drafts, like regular drafts and standard, to be on Arena, and like that's your outlet for people who are getting into standard and want to practice and playtest, and like you're saying, we will print standard cards on Moto, but we will no longer offer standard events or whatever you want to do, however you want to try and word it. And, you know, but you keep Cube and Vintage and all that stuff firing on Moto, sick. I'm in. If you want to try and, you know, take my collection, port it over to Arena, you know, take my play points or whatever, port it over to the equal amount of whatever currency you're going to have in Arena, I'm totally down with that. I'll use the new engine and the new visuals. I'm in, like 100%.
Yeah.
Just I don't want to feel like I've been a long-standing and invested customer and then just like kicked in the sack because you wanted me to move over here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I don't think that they could really do that without something. Like I said, I don't expect a total like, okay, whatever your collection was, you've got the same collection now on Arena. But but there's got to be something.
That would be the most logical thing, to be 100% honest.
That would be the most logical thing.
Not a financial compensation, but just like those ones and zeros you had are now over here. Like, that's it. It's super easy. Like,
yeah, that would be nice. Be a good way to stimulate the Eternal format on Arena as well. People can begin playing right away.
People would be incentivized to buy in because there are so many people now playing.
Yeah. All right, cool. Number two.
For you. Go ahead. I'll let you lead the way.
Okay. Mine is a Stoneforge Mystic Unbanned in Modern. And I would love to see this one come off the list. I mean, we talked quite a bit about the ban list today, so I don't want to get too bogged down in it. But many people have argued for Stoneforge Mystic for a long time. I don't think it is, by any stretch of the imagination, too strong in a format that has turn three combo wins. So bring it on. Let's have Batterskull Stoneforge Mystic mid-range toolboxy deck.
I think Jitte being on the sideline makes that very possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dude, there's so many. Modern is my secret that I left on the list here. It's my secret.
Okay.
So many things need to happen. Like, I want to ban Tron. I want to ban Thoughtseize. I want to unban Jace. I want to unban Stoneforge. Or I want to, like, print Wasteland. Or, like, just something. I can't stand these big mana decks. I can't stand the seven. Like, it's literally what I was saying earlier about Modern. It just, like, boils down in my blood. It's like four decks played the same way over and over and over. Like, I don't mind Affinity. Affinity is actually a fun interactive matchup for, like, most things. If you're playing removal spells and guys, it's hard to figure out. How do I time my removal spell? Where do I block? Like, that's, like, as weird as it sounds that I'm getting ready to say this, Affinity is kind of fun interactive magic compared to some of the shit I'm complaining about.
Yeah.
Tron is not fun interactive magic. Valakut, nope. Grixis the Shadow, it's not really interactive. They interact with you and you do nothing.
You take it.
Yeah, you get slap at 800 discard spells and they play an 8/8 and you're just like, well, I don't have anything to kill the 8/8. Even though I loaded my deck with stuff to kill it, I don't have any of it because of discard spells.
Yeah.
And even if I did, they would have the one Stubborn Denial as the last card. Like, it's not particularly a fun or enjoyable playback. But like different control decks are fun. Like Green White Value Town, that's a great deck to play against. Like, I want, like, that's a fun and interactive matchup. I want Modern to be more enjoyable. I don't mind having combo decks, but, like, you can't tell me that it's, like, healthy to have, like, Valakut and Grishol Brand in the same format.
Yeah, I get it, Daryl. I love Modern right now. I think it's a great place. I think you just have to accept what it is. And Tron's been, it's been inevitable. It's been a part of Modern for so long. It's like, the more you understand that matchup, the better you are at playing against it. And it becomes a little formulaic, right? It's like, if you see these pieces, you run this route. If you don't see these pieces, you just gotta hope you don't die. But the truth is, right, Tron is no more explosive than any of the other decks that have an engine or a combo in them. Storm can win on turn 3, too.
But, and that is a deck that I have a problem with. But, like, you can easily interact with Storm because you can beat them with counter spells and discard and creature removal. Like, running the old, like, if there's ever a situation where it's like, my draw was mediocre, hope I don't die, versus my draw is mediocre and I can kind of interact with them. Like, with Storm, that's a thing you can do. You're like, I have a lightning bolt and some dudes. It's not the most interactive draw, but, like, if I catch them with their pants down where they don't have their man, I can murder their guy and, like, beat them down with some, like, Tarmogoyfs or, like, 3/3s or whatever and get there.
Yeah.
Which is, like, with, like, Tron, you're just like, well, my hand is mediocre. I have this, like, fatal push. It's not great in this matchup. And I have, like, a couple Tarmogoyfs. I hope I don't die. Like, that's just not good magic.
Yeah, I think that Mulligans can really kill you in those kinds of games. And I agree. I agree with that. Yeah,
like, that's the kind of stuff where it's, like, a reasonably playable hand in, like, 65% of my matchups being completely and totally unplayable and forcing you to mulligan to 6, and then creating game ones where you don't know you're playing against Tron, and so you just have to keep that 65% reasonable hand, and then, like, you're a 0% dog when you find out that they play their first Tron piece. Like, you're just actually dead.
Yeah.
Like, that's not okay. Like, that kind of, or, like, when they play the Valakut. Like, that's not cool.
There are definitely spots in Modern where your game plan is just, I hope they don't have the nut draw against me, or I hope they don't even have a good draw against me. You know, you just have to hope for them to mull down to 5 and then miss their third Tron land.
Right, but, like, that's the thing. If you're saying, I have to hope
this is a bad thing.
Seriously fails,
yeah,
that just needs to not be in your format.
Right, this is, like, me agreeing with you, Daryl.
So there's a lot of things you can do to fix that. I'm going to stop ranting about how much
So your number two basically boils down to a Tron ban, really.
Oh, it's Tron, it's Death Shadow, it's Valakut. Storm is actually a deck that I'm completely fine with. Yeah. Like, Grishol Brand, like, all of these just, like, insanely, like, the only way I lose is if I combustion fail on myself. Decks.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, with Storm or Lantern, like, you can pick those decks apart and create spaces where you can win the game. You can't really pick a Valakut deck apart. You just have to hope you have land destructions.
Yeah, even that's not good enough sometimes.
So that's what I'm saying. These decks you can't really pick apart. Grixis Death Shadow is probably the exception, but I just have this, like, vicious hatred for discard and Modern. And Grixis Death Shadow is kind of the poster boy of what all these other decks have done to the format.
Yeah, it really is, like, the most oppressive Dotsies deck.
Yeah. And literally that deck has to exist because of Grishol Brand, Storm, Tron, Valakut.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
I'm done.
My number three is a Healthy Standard.
Oh, see, that's reasonable. So this is where you're going to see four different Magic players here. Right? You're about to see
that. Yeah, you're so negative, Daryl. Yeah, I think that Standard's been in a really dark place for a long time. It's gotten to the point where people just groan when they're thinking about it. And unfortunately for players who are not into Modern, and who are maybe on a lower budget or want to get into Magic with the cards that they're drafting, Standard is not a very welcoming environment for that.
No, it isn't. I agree with that. And, like, that's honestly, like, the low budget plus, like, how, like, Standard feels is why I haven't touched Standard in a while. Plus, I'm not really trying to grind to get on the Pro Tour or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, to me, it's just, like, I could take or leave Standard. As I said, this is the point where you see kind of where we differ on how our thoughts of playing Magic. Because you like to play Standard. Like, when you get a chance at a decent Standard, like, you like to play Standard.
I do, yeah, exactly. When I get a chance in a decent Standard. But lately, I've just completely given it up. I've sold out of my Standard decks. I've sold out of my Standard cards.
Even at a decent Standard, I don't really like to play Standard. I'm much more of, like, Commander, Vintage, Legacy, like, Cube. I like to play these Eternal formats.
Yeah.
Huge fan of them. And so, my number three is a complete joke, because it's never going to happen. But abolish the reserve list.
Oh, yeah. You can put that on your list every year, huh?
And like, it's kind of the same redundant thing, but like, it's like, I started getting into to paper CEDH, like multiplayer EDH, built with like, to be like the most competitive decks possible. And I have a bunch of people around here that play those kinds of decks too. And like, I've been like trying to slowly get all of the pieces for all my CEDH decks, because I'm playing like mostly blue decks. And it's like, I just picked up one of my last cards that I'm probably going to buy, which is a box diamond. It's like $150. I just traded a crap ton of stuff for it because it's $150. just reprint the damn box diamond. I don't care if it goes down to $50 and I lose a bunch of value. I just want to be able to get box diamonds for all my EDHs. And I have to have this one box diamond and move it around a zillion times, you know? I don't care about $80 mana crypts. Drop the price to $40 and just let me buy a bunch of mana crypts and put them in all my EDHs.
Yeah.
Like, the last, like, real card that I would need to own to finish most of my blue EDHs for CEDH is the Time Twister. It's like $1,000. I can't legitimately, like, I would have to trade, like, a quarter of my collection or whatever. And I can't legitimately feel good about that. And I'm not going to spend $1,000 on a Twister. Like, I could buy, like, a collector's edition one to, like, stand in while I play with my friends and stuff, but, like, I couldn't play it in, like, sanctioned EDH pods if I went to, like, the GP or something. So that's kind of annoying to me that I can't, like, play the maximum power deck I'm playing because I can't own this card. And so, like, I just want to abolish the reserve list so I can buy these cards and play with them. Like, because I don't really have this thing where I'm like a super budget player. I'm willing to buy cards, but I just can't justify buying stuff like a Time Twister or a Candelabra or a Tabernacle.
Yeah, the reserve list is brutal. It's brutal. It's what keeps me out of the older Eternal formats. And I would love to play them. And I'm sure that many people are having the same experiences. But there's no reason that the barrier to entry should be lands. You know, with the dual lands, it's like something that every deck needs. And if you need to drop $300 on a copy of a Bayou or a Tropical Island, you just can't play the format.
That's the one you're talking about there.
What's that?
Underground Sea, it's like $350 or $400 right now. Yeah.
How much is a Tropical?
It's like $175.
Oh, I guess that's not terrible compared to Underground Sea. However, that's still $175 for a goddamn land.
Underground Sea and Volcanic are the rough ones.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure Tropical Island, I will look at TCG Player for you. But I'm pretty sure Tropical Island's around $175, which is not bad for the blue ones.
Yeah. I think Wizards has to just kind of pick their battle. I think they're maybe afraid of litigation on this one because they've claimed that they're not going to reprint. But I don't know what grounds people have to be upset with them if they've made a verbal promise that they're not going to reprint cards on the reserve list. Maybe I don't understand the details, but I feel like they need to choose the players over the collectors in these points.
I agree.
They have a lot more to gain there.
So you could get an HP Tropical Island for $150, but if you want a near mint one, you're paying $220.
All right, that's a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, $220. Bayou, I'm gonna just pick these off as you said them. If you want a near mint Bayou, you're paying two. That's an unlimited bayou. Never mind.
Yeah.
I mean, just list these off because we talked about the big four pretty much, which was bayou, underground sea, volcanic, and trop.
Right.
Mid bayous are 250. Volcanics, near mint volcanics are 400. These are all revised. So it's the cheapest one you can get. And near mint underground seas are $500.
Wow.
So, I mean, you're talking HP underground sea 300. So beat up.
Yeah, yeah. That's insane. That really is insane.
Yep.
As long as the reserve list exists, I don't see Legacy being a viable format. There are almost no Legacy events that go on in the Midwest. It's sad. And yeah, it's a great format. It's a lot of fun.
It's a super fun format. They need to ban Death Rage Shaman. Oh, sorry. Got a little frog in my throat there. But Legacy is a great format. Nerd Range Gaming tries to run some like 1Ks, but there's no huge Legacy events. They're going to bring it back for the Pro Tour, and I struggle to think that's going to be okay. It's going to cause crazy spikes in the market.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up, spoilers.
Yeah, we just got dumped on today. Tons of Rivals of Ixalan spoilers.
Spoilers. All right, let's do it.
Let's keep it short. Let's pick just two or three each here. You want to start off?
Yeah. Itali Primal Storm. It's a 6-mana, 6/6 legendary creature, Elder Dinosaur. When Itali Primal Storm attacks, exile the top card of each player's library, and you may cast any number of non-land cards exiled this way without paying their mana cost.
Yeah, that card's nuts. This is a Super Dinosaur from the Super Dinosaur cycle.
I'm going to be honest. I'm a huge EDH fan. This is going straight into my Xenagos deck. And I'm going to get that 12-12 haste in there with some free spells.
Is pretty good in Xenagos.
Get some.
Yeah, it's just a rare, too. It seems like a mythic, but it's rare.
It feels like a mythic, baby. I want it.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's not, really. Cool. Yeah, that one's a lot of fun. I don't know about standard implications for that guy, but... what's that?
It's bad.
Yeah, probably. It does enough where it's like... If it can attack, it's probably pretty damn strong. However, there are just so many other things you can be doing with 6 mana, like Carnage Tyrant in the Dinosaurs deck.
Yep.
So it's probably not going to happen.
Yep.
All
right.
So Dinosaurs are getting some love in this set, but this one's all about the Merfolk and the Vampires.
Yeah.
And this next one is pretty exciting to me. Actually, John from thediscard.com shared it to me on Twitter. That was the first time I saw it. World Shaper. 3 and a green for a 3/3 Merfolk Shaman. When it attacks, you may put the top 3 cards of your library in your graveyard. And let's be real, why wouldn't you? When it dies, put all land cards from your graveyard onto the battlefield tapped. First of all, major EDH implications for, like, Gitrog monster decks. And I'd say, like, just green decks in general. That's pretty strong.
So, can I tell you where my head went when I saw this card?
Where?
How can we break this in Modern with Valakut?
With Valakut, yeah.
Because, like...
the guy who just complained about Valakut for 20 minutes.
I mean, you're going to give me the most busted thing in the world. If you're going to give me this shitty mountain thing, I'm going to try and figure out how to use it. But I hate it. I hate it so much. But, like if you can just dump a bunch of lands in the graveyard, bolt this thing, and then you just Valakut them to death, like...
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Or if you this guy is Valakut a bull. If you have Valakut and you drop a mountain, you kill this thing, and you get 3-4 fetch lands into play, that's usually enough to kill the opponent.
Seems good.
So
I just want to point that one out, you know.
Yeah, that seems pretty awesome. He is 4 mana, which is about the verge on what you can play in Modern for creatures. But those decks are already playing like Hour of Promise, and this guy might be an alternative to that in some cases, with the aforementioned circumstances. It's probably not going to survive an attack, but don't necessarily want it to either.
Nope.
So it seems pretty good. Definitely good in EDH. I'm sure it'll have some implications in Standard. I don't know what yet. There's not enough information to know, but it's a cool card.
Yep. All right.
You got another one?
I'm going to go more Eternal stuff.
Yeah.
Induced Amnesia.
Yeah, card's crazy.
when induced amnesia enters the battlefield, target player exiles all cards from his or her hand face down and draws that many cards. When induced amnesia is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, return the exiled cards to their owner's hand.
Two and a blue, by the way.
Two and a blue, yeah. Two and a blue enchantment. There's a lot of stuff going on here. I wish that it's when it left play.
Oh, rather than put in a graveyard, yeah.
You can enable some pretty busted storm combo things with this.
Sure.
So you have like four cards in your hand, you play this, you target yourself, you exile your hand, you draw three, you blink it, you put those three cards back in your hand, you exile that hand, draw six. You see where this is going?
I think it has to say graveyard for that reason.
Yeah, I know. But I wanted it. I was so excited when I saw this card. When I read the first part, I was like, oh boy. Oh, this is going to be real good. And then it said graveyard, and I was like, well, this card's real bad. Durr.
I'm wondering what, like, in modern, can sacrifice an enchantment effectively. I was thinking, like, immediately of Greater Garganon. I don't think he can do enchantments, though.
Claws of Gix.
Claws of Gix. Yep. What is that?
That is a zero mana artifact, sacrifice permanent, pay one, sacrifice permanent, you gain one life.
And that is modern legal?
It's time shifted and time spiral.
It is, okay. Yeah, I don't know if that's worth it with this card, but it might be.
I'm sure other sacrifice permanent cards, there's like a card that's just like red. Each player sacrifices, that's Falter, each player sacrifices a land, I think.
Yeah.
Hold on.
I'm thinking, remember Demonic Pact, that black enchantment that gave you a bunch of value and then you lost the game on the like fourth activation? I think that was Demonic Pact. Anyways, that would be something that seems to parallel the game plan for induced amnesia. Like, what's the best way in the way I can get the most value out of sacrificing my own enchantments? Because the enchantments that I'm gonna play in my deck have benefit to doing so.
Give me a second, I'm trying to do some investigative journalism here.
Yeah, go on.
On Gather and see if I can find something sweet. I swear to God, there's like a one red card from Kamigawa that sacrifices a permanent.
Oh, yeah, there is.
That card is real good. I just don't know what it's called. Crack the Earth. There we go. Sorcery Arcane Red. Each player sacrifices a permanent.
From Betrayers of Kamigawa.
Yeah. Curse of the Cabal is another one, but that one's real bad. See if there's anything else that's second. Nope, that card's real bad.
Yeah, well, why don't you come back to us on this one, Daryl? I think that there's ground and territory to be explored with this one.
I think
it's gonna have to be real. Real good for it.
The only one that's cracked the earth, man. The rest of these are pretty bad. Like, I mean, you could get it with the old Nico Bolas, baby. Wow.
Yeah.
I think you're already winning if you guessed it. Senor Bolas.
All right, let's jump to another one. I've got one for you.
All right, fire away.
All right, this one I have a hard time evaluating, but it seems good. Jade Light Ranger. One green, another Merfolk. 2/1. When it enters the battlefield, it explores, and then it explores again.
To me,
that seems pretty strong. I mean, if it explores and you get non-lands, you get 2+1/+1 counters on it. This is a 4/3 for 3 mana.
This card's great.
It just seems to provide a lot of stuff for you, in Standard in particular. However, it is something you get with Collected Company.
Ooh.
And with Collected Company, you can also get, like, Knight of the Reliquary. So exploring and putting land in your graveyard
doesn't suck.
So I think that there's some applications of Jade Light Ranger. It's not really card advantage in that it doesn't draw you cards, but putting cards in your graveyard and having that selection is kind of like virtual card advantage in this case. And I think that's probably something that deck could use out of the side.
Yeah, Scry is real good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that card. That card's really good. That card's better than I thought.
It's costed cheap enough where it could almost be played in the Merfolk deck in Modern, because it costs 3. It's going to have to be really good to cost 4 and get played. But Merfolk has the Aether Vials, which can tick up to 3 pretty quickly, instant speed, flash this guy in and fix your draws for the next turn seems pretty strong. I don't know. I think that the Merfolk has potential with this set coming out to go more like in the direction of like slow down a little bit basically and just play like more value Merfolk.
I mean, you can also just mill the bad card if you don't want it.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. So I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I like this card.
All right, you got another one?
I got two more.
All right, hit me.
Admiral's Order.
Okay, what is it?
One blue instant raid. If you attack with a creature this turn, you may pay blue rather than pay the spell's mana cost, counter target spell.
Oh, yeah, I like that one. I was going to bring that one up, too. Cancel at worst, right?
Yeah, cancel at worst. Does this thing have a home in Modern?
In Modern?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think I guess it's only protecting your guys on your turn.
Yeah, I mean, best case scenario, just play this spell trigger, if you need that
you
effect.
You can't trigger rain on your opponent's turn. Yeah, that's fair.
Right.
Boo! I was all excited about this card. This card sucks. I'm done.
It's getting standard. I like getting standard a lot, because we're not going to get anything better than cancel at this point. So no. You might as well have some upside that's like pretty applicable. And this one is certainly applicable.
That's a really good upside standard. But I am less excited for this card in Eternal Formats now.
Yeah.
Boo. I was all excited for a minute. Go ahead. All
right. Well, I think this Tilonali Summoner seems pretty appealing to me.
Oh,
the art
like,
is sweet.
Is that the one that's like one in a red for a 1/1 when you attack? Pay red X, and you get X 1/1s with that are tapped and attacking. And if you have the city's blessing, you don't sacrifice them.
Right. You don't. Okay. Let me read it exactly though. Every time it attacks, you may pay X and a red. If you do, create X 1/1 elemental creature tokens tapped and attacking. Exile them at the beginning of the next end step unless you have the city's blessing.
This card is real good.
Yeah.
Like,
this
card. This card enables the city's blessing all by itself.
Right.
And it is a non-zero amount of attackers.
Like, yeah, there's got to be a way to incentivize having a bunch of tokens, like maybe a lord or something. You know,
the city's
if that can
blessing.
Be found, I think it's pretty good.
The city's blessing is the answer to your question.
Sure. I mean, that's fair.
Like, so like, something... Blessing. Can you be incentivized for having the city's blessing beyond what this guy is already incentivizing me for? Yeah. The answer is, I'm sure, yes. But the city's blessing seems like a pretty darn good... I'm sure there's something that's like, if you control the city's blessing, like an artifact that says, if you control the city's blessing, search your deck for the Immortal Sun.
Yeah.
And so you might get to put this, like, put the Immortal Sun into play for, like, 3 mana or something like that. And then you have this...
I don't think this guy seems to be like an aggressive creature to me, or like kind of a go wide strategy creature to me. I don't see him.
I'm just thinking like that's your anthem though. Like, you're looking to go wide and then play this like 3 or 4 man artifact or spell that searches for the Immortal Sun.
Yeah. Something along those lines. I suppose.
It's a thought. I don't know.
All right. Pure
speculation. I got one more.
Can I guess what your third one is?
I go for it.
It's gotta be Ravenous Chupacabra, right?
God damn right, I love cards. I love this card. Get that skin render out of your cube, people who have skin render in your cube.
Yeah.
Plus it just murders anything.
Yeah. It's like obvious similarities to Necrotal, but Ravenous Chupacabra, 2BB for a 2/2 beast horror. When it enters the battlefield, destroy target creature and opponent controls. Does not need to be non-black, does not need to be non-artifact. This does not have first strike.
I just want to point out though, you play this guy. You murder a thing. And then they murder it back. And then you play the Scarab God.
Yeah, this guy's good with Scarab God.
This guy is bananas with the Scarab God.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a Ravenous Chupacabra and murder your other thing. Like, okay. I guess that's fair. Like, yep, this is real dumb. People are going to hate this card until the Scarab God kicks out.
Yep.
That's all. This card, I got all warm and fuzzy inside when I saw it and thought of the Scarab God. I was like, ooh, the value.
Yeah.
That's it.
All right, I'm going to leave you with one more here. I think this guy's pretty good. Angrath the Flame Chain. 3 black red for 4 loyalty planeswalker. Plus 1 is each opponent discards a card and loses 2 life. The minus 3 is gain control of target creature until end of turn. Untap it gains haste. Then sacrifice it at the beginning of your next end step if it has converted mana cost 3 or less. The ultimate, minus 8. Each opponent loses life equal to the number of cards in his or her graveyard.
Whoa.
So let's start with that plus 1. We've already seen that to be effective with Chandra, the Torch of Defiance, right? Her plus 1, just exiling the top card of your library, not even casting it, and just nugging them for 2 every time, is really pretty damn good. And probably the most frequent way that that card ends up just locking the game down.
So your opponent loses 2 life and discards a card?
And discards a card for plus 1. He goes up to 5 loyalty when you do that.
That's pretty good. This guy's 5.
Excuse me?
Is he 5 mana?
He is 5 mana, yeah. 3 red black. Yeah.
I could buy this. So far I like.
Yeah.
The minus I'm a little iffy on.
Really? Why?
It's just, so you only sacrifice it if it's little.
Sure.
But otherwise they get it back.
But
that's my only problem, is that you only sacrifice it if it's little.
Right. This Planeswalker does something that no other Planeswalker does, though, and that's threaten. And so it can be, like, strangely aggressive in that respect.
That's not true. Sarkhan Vol has threaten.
Does he? Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, this is the most recent one with threaten. It's been a while since we saw Sarkhan Vol.
Sarkhan Vol has a very bad plus. This card's plus is much better.
Yeah. Its ultimate is great, too.
That is not the zone I expected them to say. I expected them to say in hand.
Yeah, no, he basically wins the game with that minus 8.
Yeah, that is murder. That is delightful, and I like where it's going.
Yeah. I think the card's really good.
I just wish that the minus 3 was just sacrifice the creature straight up. If it was just sacrifice the creature straight up, great.
Yeah. You don't get to attack with it. You just gain control of it and sacrifice it.
You get to attack with it too. You get the whole mod. Like, take it, smack them, sack it, done.
Oh, sure.
Like the whole thing you would want to do with a threaten, because it all the way. Like, if that was just the one it did, that would be pretty good.
Yeah, minus 3 is a lot to ask. I mean, this guy comes into play. He either goes up to 5 and is really hard to kill, or he goes down to 1 and is like easy as heck to kill.
I guess that would be a bit much though. Is like, if you could play it, steal their only creature, smack them with it. Get like a trigger if it had a triggered ability, and then just sacrifice it no matter what. That'd be a little too bad.
Yeah, right. And finish him off the next turn with the plus 1.
Yeah.
That might be too strong, Daryl.
Too good. I guess you're right. I guess I'll.
All right. Well, there's a lot of cool stuff in this set. It's looking very exciting at this point. So we'll have to spend some more time with the spoilers next week. However, we're out of time.
We're done.
We're done. So stay tuned for our take on the rest of the cards as they arrive in this spoiler week. This set's coming out soon, man.
Is it really?
Yeah. Release date is pre-release weekend is January 13th. That's like next weekend, or isn't it? Next weekend.
Yeah.
And the launch is on Modo is January 15th, and the release date is January 19th.
So, how about that?
How about that? Yeah, we've had a lot of products come out lately, and this is now a new year. However, we're going to continue to see lots and lots of products because we have 2 more master sets this year. We've got a bunch of all of these standard legal sets, and I'm sure we're going to have plenty of supplementary product as they have announced the tournament decks.
New year, same cops driving by my apartment.
What's that?
New Year, same cops driving by my
apartment. That's right, yeah. They're still looking for you, Daryl. They haven't found you yet.
I mean, to be fair, I live next to a police station.
Well, that would explain it.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, thanks for listening. We're gonna close out on that. Cardnock Life is proud to be a part of MTGcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website, and if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.